Lend me your ears. The studio. Courses and masterclasses.
Welcome back to episode 5 of Historical Vocalities. You are now going to hear 4 creatives and activists from across the 20th and 21st centuries in the US and the UK. Please note that the forthcoming recording includes language of a very sensitive nature, which may be of some offence to listeners. Cambridge, 1965. James Baldwin, the renowned African-American social critic, meets William Buckley, a leading conservative whose silver tongue and social class had for years masked the vile racism at the core of his philosophy. It was a seminal debate. This in itself is a reliving of the occasion when Baldwin dismantled his racist opponent through cool reason and unimpeachable sincerity, earning an unprecedented ovation from the practically all-white audience at the Cambridge Union in the process.
What is relevant about this is that whereas 40 years ago when I was born, the question of having to deal with what is unspoken by the subjugated, what is never said to the master, of having to deal with this reality was a very remote possibility. It was in no one's mind. When I was growing up, I was taught in American history books that Africa had no history, and neither did I. That I was a savage, about whom the less said the better, who had been saved by Europe and brought to America. And of course, I believed it. I didn't have much choice. Those were the only books there were. Everyone else seemed to agree. If you walk out of Harlem, ride out of Harlem, downtown, the world agrees. What you see is much bigger, cleaner, whiter, richer, safer than where you are. They collect the garbage. People obviously can pay their life insurance. The children look happy, safe. You're not. And you go back home. And it would seem then, of course, that it's an act of God, that this is true, that you belong where white people have put you. It is only since the Second World War that there's been a counter image in the world. And that image has not come about through any legislation on the part of any American government, but through the fact that Africa was suddenly on the stage of the world, and Africans had to be dealt with in a way they'd never been dealt with before. This gave an American Negro, for the first time, a sense of himself beyond a savage or a clown. It has created, and will create, a great many conundrums. One of the great things that the white world does not know, but I think I do know, is that black people are just like everybody else. One has used the myth of Negro and the myth of color to pretend and to assume that you are dealing essentially with something exotic, bizarre, and practically, according to human laws, unknown. Alas, it is not true. We are also mercenaries, dictators, murderers, liars. We are human too. What is crucial here is that unless we can manage to establish some kind of dialogue between those people whom I pretend have paid for the American dream and those other people who have not achieved it, will be in terrible trouble.
In this recording, Brooks's confident musical voice emphasizes the rhythmical patterns of her poetry. On performing the poem, We, Real Cool, Brooks has said the we you are supposed to stop after the we and think about their validity. And of course, there's no way for you to tell whether it should be said softly or not, I suppose. But I say it rather softly because I want to represent their basic uncertainty, which they don't bother to question every day, of course. The recording was made on the 19th of January 1961 at the Recording Laboratory, Library of Congress, Washington, D.C., and is used with permission of the Library of Congress.
We Real Cool, the pool players, seven at the Golden Shovel. We Real Cool, we left school, we lurk late, we strike straight, we sing sin, we thin gin, we jazz June, we die soon.
Next up, you may hear how each phrase melts, lands, and settles into the next in this second short poem by Brooks, as she mellifluously recites and melodically speaks each line with effortless rhythm. This poem is titled A Song in the Front Yard.
A Song in the Front Yard. I've stayed in the front yard all my life. I want to peek at the back, where it's rough and untended and hungry weed grows. A girl gets sick of a rose. I want to go in the backyard now and maybe down the alley to where the charity children play. I want a good time today. They do some wonderful things. They have some wonderful fun. My mother sneers, but I say it's fine how they don't have to go in at 8:45. My mother, she tells me that Johnny May will grow up to be a bad woman, that George will be taken to jail soon or late. On account of last winter, he sold our back gate. But I say it's fine, honest I do, and I'd like to be a bad woman too, and wear the brave stockings of night black lace and strut down the streets with paint on my face.
In this next recording, Akala gives full address and Q&A at the Oxford Union. This event took place in 2015, and the opening passages from his address give a strong sense of his position about the black voice in the UK and the deep distortions of colonialism, and his clear, open and direct ability to make vibrant contact with his audience.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you feeling? Yeah, good? Excellent. Now, I'm going to presume, seeing as there's not a clicker here waiting for me, that someone's going to press next slide every time I call for that. Yeah? Fantastic. Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, the subject of the talk today being Black History as the Lost Pages of Human History. Actually, the quote itself comes from the great Pan-Africanist historian, Dr. John Hemrick Clarke, who spoke about Black history in this way and looked at the way in which the history of people of African descent and of Africa itself had to be functionally distorted to justify transatlantic slavery and colonialism in a way that we kind of can't fully comprehend or understand today. If we think about a time just over 100 years ago when African human beings were literally kept in zoos in London, in New York, in Paris, that gives us a sense of the strength of colonial propaganda and how deeply it had taken root in this society and others, to the point that it was actually argued by hard science, by people who considered themselves serious academics, that black people were more closely related to monkeys than to other human beings. But what we know, just as we can see today, that dishonest scholarship can be a tool for profitable foreign policy, So is the case in the past. I think a lot of the time we're led to believe that people actually believed the propaganda of the time, those scholars we're talking about. When we know, just as we can see today, people have more knowledge about what's going on in some country in Africa or Asia that we might be preparing to go to war with, so did they know more back then we're led to believe. There was no magical time when people who really had knowledge about the world didn't know what was really going on the ground. History was distorted deliberately in particular ways, and that legacy is still with us in many ways, to the point that even for someone like me, who I'd like to feel lots of my followers are socially engaged, know about the world, when I post pictures, I was in Zimbabwe a couple of weeks ago, this just gives you an example. When I post pictures of the capital city of Zimbabwe, Harare, and they've got skyscrapers and nice hotels and the beautiful jacaranda trees, if you've ever been to Harare, you'll know this. Nice restaurants, people are like, wow, they've got skyscrapers in Africa. I don't know if people think people in Africa still live in mud huts. I don't know if people believe, as you're going to see over the next half an hour, there was ever a time when everyone in Africa lived in mud huts. But the strength of propaganda, even for people of African origin, is still with us to that point that we have this thing called Black History Month. Now, for those who don't know, the idea for Black History Month was invented or came up with by an African-American scholar called Carter G. Woodson. He wrote a book called The Miseducation of the Negro, which looked at the way in which African-Americans had to be functionally miseducated for transatlantic slavery and then the subsequent Jim Crow apartheid to function in America. But I would take what Woodson was saying, although I agree with him, one step further, and I would say that for racism to function in human society, full stop, everyone has to be functionally miseducated about the human story. And no part of the human story, in my view, has been more distorted than the history of the African continent and then its descendants. So I'm going to try and share, in half an hour, tens of thousands of years of history with you very quickly, some of the snapshots of what we should be teaching. Because if we're not careful, what happens is Black History Month comes around and we do exactly what it was not supposed to be intended to do. We subtly reinforce the idea, which was argued by serious historians at one point, that Africa has no history, by teaching transatlantic slavery and Martin Luther King. And with the greatest of respect to Dr. King, brave and courageous as he was, I'm fairly sure if he was alive today, he would go spare at the idea that he was the sum total of Black people's contribution to the human story. So it's important that we look at what we should be teaching during this month to correct some of these misconceptions, because people cannot be blamed for their ignorance if they are genuinely ignorant. People can be blamed if they've had a different set of information and still choose to remain ignorant. So can I go on to the first slide, please?
Amanda Cozy McQuashy, Chief Executive of Christian Aid, shares the 8 tracks, book, and luxury she will take with her if cast away to a desert island. With BBC radio broadcaster Laura Navern, here she speaks about the injustices and inequities Black women and girls face in the world at large and in employment, and how she has allowed her faith to be a saving grace throughout the adversities that she has endured throughout her journey.
Amanda Cozy McQuashy, you eventually were able to pursue your commitment to social justice in the many organisations that you went on to work for, from VSO International to the UN. And in 2018, you became the chief executive of Christian Aid, which you have described as your dream job. Why?
I think I needed this job, perhaps even more than it needed me, because I needed to bring my faith into my work, and I needed to find that strength to be able to speak out. I think that I still have a lot of speaking out to do because there's a lot of injustice in the world, but I needed to start somewhere.
As I'm sure you know, Amanda, just 3% of charity chief executive officers are from Black and minority ethnic groups. What message would you like your appointment to send out about what's possible?
People like me, being in such positions, should not be an extraordinary event or occurrence. But the message that I really want to send is, especially to young people, young girls of colour, that you can get there, but I'm not going to lie to you, it is not easy. When there are only 3% at senior level and you're the only one when you go into meetings, it's very difficult. It's very difficult because it feels like, whether rightly or wrongly, it feels like I'm carrying the weight of Black people on my shoulders, Black women, Black girls. And so when I'm in a on a platform with others and nobody mentions the injustice in terms of racial injustice, I feel under pressure to mention it.
How do you manage that?
It is exhausting, but what is the alternative, right? I've got a seat at the table. I owe it to not just people of color. I owe it to all of us as a society to use that platform and that space to call out any injustice.
Amanda, it's time for your next disc. What is it and why are you taking it with you today?
It's a legendary song known by so many people. But I'm picking it today because I think that in all the injustices that I've talked about, part of the solution starts with each one of us. And for those of us who come from communities that have been downtrodden, we need to free ourselves and give ourselves the permission to be the very best of who we are.
Thank you for listening to our four key Black creatives and activists, James Baldwin, Gwendolyn Brooks, Akala, and Amanda Cozy Mukwashi. Please give yourself a few moments to think about the ways in which their vocal sound and intention in its public expression impacts on your own vocal positionality in a public or private context. Now we're about to proceed with a reflective instruction. Please reflect on the ways in which the voices that have made a difference to you have been heard over your lifetime. Allow any feelings about their presence or absence, their dominance or lack of dominance, to come to surface. The feelings that arise may be difficult and complex. Take a breath and give yourself permission to notice what is going on. Keep your feet on the ground and allow the exchange of breath to keep you rooted in the here and now, so that any of the feelings this reflective work gives rise to are acknowledged and given shape in your reflective notebook. Can you remember how the voices that have meant the most to you have reached you? Did you hear them on A, public media platforms, B, private audio exchange, C, familial gatherings, D, friendship groups, E, live performance contexts, F, spiritual contexts, G, other? Write down the ways in which their influence has made a difference to your A, vocal use in public and private, volume and pace. B, spoken word confidence in groups, type of words. C, one-to-one conversational tone, musicality, tone, pitch, inflection. D, any distinctive features in your vocal sound pitch range.
La cuchoni langa zagubui inkomo da kutinga ngawe la kuchoni langa yakuveli nyanga sheya kolwandle sakubuyintaka lagujoni langa ndo Zitradweni Esbelela Etrongweni Ndide Ndikufumane Lagochoni Langa Zagubui
Relax and notice the breath. Stretch and shake out, and give yourself a few minutes to notice your feelings and sensations in the body before you go back into your day. Thank you for engaging in the Historical Vocalities podcast workshop.
Lend Me Your Ears. The Studio. Recorded as part of Oral Dramaturgies, an AHRC Leadership Fellowship held by Dusko Radosavljević at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama. Thank you.